something, yeah. Really hustling, yeah. Y'all can get that money, yeah. We get that money, yeah. Rags to riches, 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 riches.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the fifth episode of Sideline Story, man. And today, I know everybody's asking around the world, what happened to the Clippers, man? I'm sure everybody know by now and has seen the Clippers were manhandled by the Denver Nuggets in Game 7 of their series. For the Clippers, the big question is, did anybody show up for that game? Kawhi Leonard and Pandemic P, Paul George, combined for 24 points on 26% from the field. As a coach, that is your worst nightmare. Now, we haven't really seen a game like this from Kawhi on this stage, but for Paul George, when is it going to end? When is he finally going to step up big time in the playoffs? Paul George really went from being the man in Indiana and the next big thing to compete against LeBron to really being in the sidekick role now. He has lost his determination and his motive, in my opinion, to go out and dominate. There's no way in Game 7 he should only have 10 points and shooting off the side of the backboard. Paul George is an offensive guru and should be able to dominate games and take over in any time. For Kawhi, many argue that he is the best player in the NBA. For him to come out and play like that and be in that conversation, it's pathetic. For me, he still has a long way to go and a big step to take to catch a guy like LeBron James who plays in the same arena as him. In Game 7, the Clippers didn't have the best or even the second best player on the court. For a team who was so cocky and so confident that they were the team to beat, they got shown up by a team who was just hungrier and more determined than them. For the Clippers, this season seems to be one of the biggest disappointments in basketball history. You go out this year and this summer and you build a team to compete against the Lakers, but don't even make it to the finals of the Western Conference to give yourself that chance. The team didn't have any chemistry on the court, and it showed in the last three games. The Clippers were up in Game 5 and Game 6 by double figures and still couldn't seal the deal. For the Nuggets, they came out and dominated the Clippers, especially in the second half. Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic put the team on their back and led them to the conference finals. Jamal Murray seemed unstoppable in the Game 7 as he scored 40 points off 15-26 from the field. Jokic scored 16 points but also had 22 rebounds and 13 assists. Jokic had a triple-double by the third quarter and obviously looked like the best player on the court last night. This team has a ton of momentum going into the conference finals where they'll be facing off against the LA Lakers and LeBron James. For the Nuggets to be successful in the finals, they have to keep up the grit and grind mentality and the confidence that they have going into this series. They also have to get support from players like Gary Harris, Jeremy Grant, and Michael Porter Jr. These guys will play key factors in the series if they can step up to the plate. As we move forward to the conference finals of the Western Conference, we are looking at a 1-3 matchup with the Lakers and the Nuggets. And then in this matchup, many people were excited to see and expecting to see the Battle of LA, Lakers versus Clippers. But this Nuggets team shocked the world. For the Lakers, they have been playing at a high level on both ends of the floor. They are averaging 114 points per game on 49.6% from the field, and also shooting 36% from three. Everyone has picked up their game behind the two leaders, LeBron and Anthony Davis. On the defensive end, the Lakers are averaging 36 rebounds and 8 steals, which is second in the NBA since the playoff began. They have a defensive rating of 105.4. And this team has definitely shown why they're the number one seed in the West and that they plan on continuing that on that road to the NBA Finals. My prediction, the Lakers will win 4-2. The Nuggets will definitely compete, and they will be able to win some games behind Murray and Jokic. But at the end of the day, I feel like LeBron and Anthony Davis will be too much for this Nuggets team. And the Lakers role players who have been playing well and knocking down shots for LeBron and Anthony Davis will continue to find their rhythm in a big way. Game 1 of this series will begin Friday night, September 18th at 8 o'clock on TNT. In the Eastern Conference, man, Game 1 definitely lives up to the hype. The Boston Celtics and Miami Heat will be a great series to watch. Miami took Game 1 in a 117-114 win behind 29 points from leading scorer Gordon Dragic. From the Heat, they had 5 players in double figures behind Dragic with 22 points from Jay Crowder, 20 points from Jimmy Butler, 18 points from Bam Adebayo, and 12 points from Tyler Herro. Butler, who had a step back three to put the Heat up one with 22 seconds left in the fourth quarter, also hit the game-winning layup and one with a free throw to put them up two with 12 seconds left in overtime. Adebayo kept up his play by adding 6 rebounds and 9 assists and also had the game-saving block on Jason Tatum with 3.7 seconds left in the game. This Miami team used plenty of runs to get themselves back in the game after being down by as much as 14 points to the Celtics. This just shows the grit mentality the team has to never give up. For Boston, they had five players in double figures as well, led by Jason Tatum with 30 points, and he also averaged 14 rebounds. Tatum, who did lead the team in scoring, took some questionable shots in the fourth quarter and overtime. Behind Tatum, Marcus Smart scored 26 points, Kemba Walker added 19, Jaylen Brown scored 17, and Brad Wanamaker added 11 points off the bench. For the Celtics, they had to find a way to close out games. They were up multiple times by double figures, including going into the fourth quarter, and Miami continued to battle back. Boston has three guys who, at the end of the games, can be closers in those situations, in Tatum, Brown, and Walker, and those three guys have to be the ones to take over when the time is right. Neither of these guys really shot the ball exceptionally well tonight, but they need to come back next game and perform to the best of their abilities in order to beat Miami team. My prediction for this series will go seven games. Both of these teams have a fight behind them to get to the NBA Finals. I do think that Boston is the better team, but I feel like the Heat will come out on top 4-3 behind Jimmy Butler and his experience and ability to win games. Butler just has that mentality to go get it, and no matter what, I feel like he will lead this team to the finals to play the Lakers. Next on this episode, the NBA released the date for the NBA draft, which will be held on November 18th. I went over the 1-4 order from the draft lottery on the last episode, and I want to give my order of picks now by each team. Start at number one, I start with the Minnesota Timberwolves. I feel like the Timberwolves, this team needs a solid wing to mix with Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell. With this pick, the Timberwolves should draft Anthony Edwards. Edwards, who played at Georgia and averaged 19 points and 5 rebounds for this team, he comes in as a 6'5 guard who can score the ball from all three levels. Of course, Edwards needs to improve his three-point shooting, but overall, Edwards is the best player in this draft. Edwards can be the second scorer behind Karl-Anthony Towns because we have seen Russell be his best while being a playmaker. So adding a guy, a scorer, and a slasher like Anthony Edwards for this team, they will become more competitive in the Western Conference. At number two, they have the Golden State Warriors. For Golden State, it's weird to see them in this position to have a draft pick this early because we've seen them win and win and win so many times before. But we can't forget that they played over half a season without Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. With this pick, I feel like the best pick for them will be to draft a guy like James Wiseman. Wiseman, who only played 11 games at Memphis before getting in trouble with the NCAA, was averaging 19.7 points and 11 rebounds on 77% shooting from the field. I guess for me in this situation is they draft a mobile big like Wiseman, who doesn't have to come out when the Warriors want to go small, because he's a guy who can guard small and also can shoot from the outside and also post up and face up with the best of them. It would be great for him to be able to learn from guys like Steph and Klay and Draymond Green. At number three, for Charlotte, I hate to do it, but it seems like we're going to have an MJ versus LeVar part two. For the Hornets, they're missing the playmaker. They spent all that time on Terry Rozier for him not to pan out the best way, so for the Hornets, they should draft LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball averaged 17.7 rebounds and 7 assists in the NBL last year. Ball is a 6'7 point guard who is arguably the best playmaker in the draft and can also knock down the three ball. For the Hornets, they can play LaMelo Ball beside Devontae Graham, who they can play off the ball on offense, putting LaMelo in that lineup with a young core of Graham, Malik Monk, Miles Bridges, and PJ Washington will be some exciting basketball in Charlotte. At four, we have the Chicago Bulls. For Chicago, they have a great backcourt in Kobe White and Zach LaVine, and they also have a good up-and-coming frontcourt in Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. So for them, in my opinion, the best thing to do is to go after a solid wing. And for me, with this pick, they should draft Obi Toppin. Toppin, who is a 6'9 forward from Brooklyn, New York, he averaged 20 points and 7.5 rebounds while shooting 63% from the field while at Dayton. Toppin is an athletic wing who can score and shoot the ball from all three levels and can guard multiple positions in the league. Putting him in the lineup at the three spot between the other four young players can give this Bulls team a chance in the Eastern Conference. At five, I got to go with the Cleveland Cavaliers, of course. And for the Cleveland Cavaliers, they haven't been really relevant since LeBron departed and took his talents out west to the Los Angeles. For the Cavs, they have some good young pieces in Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, and they also have some good vets in Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson. For the Cavs, they need a solid wing as well, and the next best one in this draft would be Deni Avdija. Avdija, who reminds NBA scouts of a Hilo Turkoglu, is a player with great size at 6'9", who can play the shooting guard position and also play through the power forward position if needed. He can shoot the ball exceptionally well and can also play a secondary playmaker if needed by this Cavaliers team. At 6, we have the Atlanta Hawks. For Atlanta, they have some great young pieces who they can put together, starting with point guard Trae Young, and then he's starting to mix with John Collins, Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter. And the key pick up they had last year was Clint Capela, who they picked up for a center. With this pick, I want them, and I see them going with USC power forward slash center Onyeka Okongwu. He averaged 16 points per game and 9 rebounds for the Trojans last year. This guy's a guy who can play great in the pick and roll. He can also play face up in the post and make plays. He's a great defender and rebounder, which reminds me of more skilled Clint Capela, because he can also shoot the ball from the mid-range, which helps him out in this league. At 7, we have the Detroit Pistons. For the Pistons, they need some help big time. They have Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose, but after that, they need another big-time player. And for me, they have to go with France guard Killian Hayes. Hayes, who is a guy who can be put at both guard positions at 6'5", can play the point, but also has a body and scoring ability to score the ball at the shooting guard position. Hayes can be a great player to pair with Derrick Rose, and he can learn so much from him in his rookie year. At number 8, we have the New York Knicks. For the Knicks, they need some more kind of excitement as well. They haven't been competitive since Carmelo left New York. For the Knicks, they drafted RJ Barrett last year in the draft, and this year, I feel like they should go for a point guard to pair with Barrett in the backcourt, and Mitchell Robinson. With this 8th pick, they should draft a guy like Tyrese Halliburton. Halliburton, who played at Iowa State, is a 6'5 combo guard who averaged 15.2 points, 6.5 assists, and 6 rebounds for the Cyclones. For the Knicks, this guy can be a guy who can be a good playmaker and scorer to pair with RJ Barrett. He can shoot the basketball from deep, and with his length, is able to guard multiple guard positions. At number 9, we have the Washington Wizards. For the Wizards, the health of John Wall will be a big-time thing for them this upcoming season. But if they can compare him with Bradley Beal, these guys will definitely make some playoff noise. But another key piece they are missing is a high-energy wing player. With this pick for me, I feel like they should go with Isaac Okoro from Auburn. Okoro, who only averaged 13 points per game for the Tigers, was an athletic wing who for the Tigers guarded the opposing team's best player. Okoro is a guy who has always been an underdog, but has shown at Auburn that he has star potential. Placing Okoro with a guy like Bradley Beal, who is also an SEC guy, can take Okoro's scoring to the next level while keeping his defensive skill up to par. At number 10, we have the Phoenix Suns. For the Suns, they were a team who played exceptionally well in the bubble, going 8-0 behind coach Monty Williams and Devin Booker. The Suns have a great young core in Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and Mikal Bridges. And with this pick, I feel like they should draft Cole Anthony, point guard from North Carolina. Anthony, who did get injured at UNC, had the Tar Heels looking really good before he went down. He averaged 18.5 points for the Tar Heels and can be a great pair with Devin Booker in the backcourt for the future as a great playmaker beside him. At 11, we have the San Antonio Spurs. For the Spurs, this was the first year they didn't make a playoff since Coach Pop took over as head coach. For them, they have a good mix of guys for me. They need maybe another wing to go alongside DeMar DeRozan. With this pick, the Spurs should draft Devin Vassell from Florida State. Vassell, who is a 6'7 wing, who is long and athletic. Vassell, who averaged 12 points per game for the Florida State Seminoles, can run the floor and also score from all three levels on the court. For San Antonio, this can help them get out and run an open floor. And Vassell being able to learn from DeMar DeRozan and Rudy Gay can help him become a better player for the future. At 12, we have the Sacramento Kings. For Sacramento, they have a young core of De'Aaron Fox, Buddy Hield, and Marvin Bagley. That they are wanting to grow with, and they only missing another wing to pair beside Fox and Buddy Hield. This is where a guy like Patrick Williams from Florida State again is drafted. Williams, who only averaged 9.2 points per game from Florida State, shot 46% from the field and 33% from the three-point line. He is a 6'8 small forward with a 6'11 wingspan at age 19. This guy has potential to be a great asset for this team if he continues to work hard and grow within this team. At 13, we have the New Orleans Pelicans. For New Orleans, this is a chance for them to definitely make their team better. They added Zion last year in the draft, and he made a big difference for this team in the games he did play. And next year, we will be able to see him in a full season. In this year's draft, I feel like it's only right for them to bring in another combo guard to back up Lonzo and Jrue Holiday. Aaron Nesmith is the player I feel that can play guard and point guard in most positions. Nesmith, who started at Vanderbilt, is averaged 23 points per game while shooting 51% from the field and 52% from the three-point line. He is a guy who can shoot the three ball very well, as you see his percentage earlier. This guy has a 6'10 wingspan, which gives him great length for the NBA. At 14, we have the Boston Celtics. With this pick, the Celtics really could use some more interior help, some athletic interior help. With this pick, I feel like the Celtics should go after a guy like Jalen Smith from Maryland. Smith, who is a 6'10 power forward, is an athletic big man and averaged 15.5 points per game and 10.5 rebounds on 53.8% shooting from the field. He will be a guy who can play inside for the Celtics and also can be a good rim protector for them in the future. Last thing on today's episode of the Sideline Story, the all-NBA teams came out today. First team, we have LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Anthony Davis, Giannis, and James Harden. Second team, we have Kawhi Leonard, Nikola Jokic, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, Pascal Siakam. And third team, we have Jason Tatum, Jimmy Butler, Rudy Gobert, Ben Simmons, Russell Westbrook. For me, I see a couple players missing from this list. I don't see how players like Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, and Trae Young didn't make any of these teams. Trae Young averaged 29.6 points per game and 9.3 assists. Bradley Beal averaged 30.5 points per game and 6.1 assists. And Devin Booker averaged 26.6 points per game, 6.5 assists, and had his team in the hunt for the eighth seed in the Western Conference while they were getting 8-0 in the bubble. For NBA voters, we have to stop punishing players for not having the roster to win like some of the other players do. These guys, stat-wise, had one of the best seasons in the NBA, and just because they don't win doesn't mean they shouldn't get rewarded. And for me, that is all on this episode of the Sideline Story. Thank you all for the love and support that you guys show me. And until next time, be blessed and be safe. Peace.